upon the snow, straw against the chill.
Music from Kathy Mattea. Straw Against the Chill, 13 and a half after the hour now. On a Monday morning, it's, Don, it's 18 below here. How are things down in Garden Valley, Texas?
Oh, well, it's not that cold.
No, I hope
not. It's probably about 30.
Ooh.
30, maybe 32.
Sounds downright tropical, yeah.
Dr.
Don Clark, member of the Board of Creation Moments, joins us now. Don, a biochemist, and he's kind of our resident everything science kind of guy. And we speak to Don just about every Monday morning. And Hanley's course, a big disruption to the you saw some of the country, didn't you, the last couple of weeks? Cleveland, up in Cleveland and Kansas City. Been traveling the midsection, huh?
Oh, we have. And it it was a long, long trip from East Texas all the way up to Cleveland via Kansas City, because we had to we picked up one of our daughters who's at International House of Prayer in Kansas City. And then we drove on to Cleveland, where we have another daughter, and we spent Christmas with her.
Okay, and a touch of snow in Cleveland as well. So you did have a white Christmas then.
Yeah, I would say maybe about 2 to 3 inches of snow.
Okay, so that's just enough. just enough. Glad to have you back, though, and glad everything went safely, and looking forward to a whole new year with you here. We've covered so much ground in the past couple of years. We talk often about science and faith and young Earth, old Earth, and just about anything to do with science. I ran across an article a couple of weeks ago I wanted to kind of bring up for discussion today. This is some research that's been done out of the University of New South Wales. Stephen Rowe is working with an international team, and he says the researchers there were able to determine how the hyoid, that's a tough one to say, H-Y-O-Y-D, hyoid bone, which is a horseshoe-shaped structure in the neck, worked in Neanderthals. Apparently they have an example or a graphic representation of it or something. And they've concluded that probably, in all likelihood, Neanderthals were capable of speech. What say you, sir? Any surprise in this?
There is no surprise in this. Mm-hmm. This is one of those things that is totally unspectacular, depending on your point of view mm-hmm. and your worldview, I should say, because if your worldview is, well, you know, we evolved and Neanderthals were just a step in the ladder to humans, then you might be surprised because. Animals, for example, do not have speech capability, but they were apparently surprised that Neanderthals did have not only speech capability, but highly complex speech capability. So it appears that this is just another proof that, well, you know, Neanderthals are just a slight variation from humans, and as a matter of fact, they are human.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. Yeah. Well, does this suggest, though, that the complex thought went along with the ability of complex speech? When you say complex, I guess everything's relative, but do you suppose they had philosophical discussions? Do you suppose they talked about hunting and basic primal kinds of things or sophisticated thought?
Oh, no, I believe they were completely capable of sophisticated thought, making tools and surviving, obviously, in a pretty harsh environment of Germany, where they were found. Complex thought, I mean, that differentiates, I guess, really from a lot of animals make sounds, obviously, and, animals grunt and do all kinds of things. But to actually form words and, communicate in a complex way, requires a different vocal structure than animals have. Obviously, humans have it, but there are no other animals that they've found to have such a complex, vocal structure.
Except, don't we keep discovering how animals communicate at different frequencies and in different ways, and we're almost continually surprised by how complex they are, and how much of their capability we've been ignorant of in the past. I guess that's one of the benefits of science, is we keep learning this, how elephants communicate with low-frequency rumbles that just go for miles, and whales and dolphins, and we continually surprise ourselves with how much we don't know.
Well, that's true. And they can communicate, the whales, obviously, with their songs. We think that, wow, isn't that a beautiful whale song? Well, they're they're communicating with each other, and sometimes for hundreds, if not thousands of miles, you know, away under the ocean. Yeah, obviously, these sounds are you know, they're sonic. So whales have the capability of communicating with other whales great distances, and so do dolphins. And but that's a different type of communication than obviously communicating a thought, you know, concept. For example, you know, let's say we get together and we say, well, you know, this river needs a bridge. So how are we going to do this? You know, we're actually communicating in such a way that, well, you know, we're contemplating building something and creating something, you know, from scratch. Mm-hmm. Whereas other animals, even though, you know, their communication process we don't quite understand yet, but they would be communicating, you know, hey, I'm a male and I'm looking for a female. Is there any females out there? Or, you know, it's that time of year where we need to migrate, you know, to warmer waters or whatever it is.
Well, you know, and I suspect that that's all part of their communication, but aren't we kind of assuming that that's the only level that they operate on? You know, we take a look at this supposed capability of complex speech in Neanderthals, and we say, doesn't that make us superior? Well, it lets us do things that other species can't do, like you say, build a bridge, get together, and, well, maybe and maybe not. Maybe they don't need a bridge. You know, they find other ways to accomplish what they need to accomplish. But we get together and brew trouble for ourselves, don't we? We have divisions and opinions and political positions and things that separate us from one another. And a lot of that due to our complex ability to talk and to think. I'm not sure that's entirely an asset.
And sometimes it's not, because obviously we have wars with one another. Mm. You know, that's a result of sin. But, you know, I think, you know, the differentiation here is not only physical, in that we have we're capable of making multiple different types of sounds, which allows us to produce, you know, speech, but we have obviously the intelligence to, you know, put words together in such a way that we're communicating ideas and concepts to one another, whether it be good ideas or bad ideas. You know, that's up to the individual or individuals that are trying to communicate with each other. It points back to that we are made differently than the animals around us. And so from a creationist point of view, we find that this is just another example of, you know, how humans are separated from the animal kingdom. In this case, it's a physical kind of a separation. But if we are indeed made in God's image, which, of course, I firmly believe that we are, then we are made up of three parts. The body is just one, the soul and the spirit. So there is something uniquely different about humans that other animals do not have. And in this case, it would be the spirit that God breathed into us.
And I would suspect, too, that the ability for complex speech and complex thought kind of go hand in glove. But one would stimulate the other, wouldn't it?
Well, it would. Mm-hmm. It would, because, you know, even if you're just reading a book, which is a complex activity, by the way, because you're doing kind of image recognition on, you know, very small characters, you know, on a computer screen or on the printed page, you're turning that into some type of you know, word, which then has a meaning, and, you know, from there you're building a concept, and that concept that you're building then builds off of your past experiences and the past concepts that you've already acquired through life. to be able to, you know, enhance, you know, certain qualities or quantities or whatever that, you know, you might be thinking of at the time. So, for example, talking about the bridge example, we could go on the internet and say, well, how do you build a bridge? Well, here's a number of different ways to build a bridge, and we don't have to start from scratch by just putting a log across the river and saying, okay, well, let's just start here. Well, this is not very stable. What do we do now? You know,
so we learn from language is a way to record thoughts of past generations and people from eons ago, so we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We start from a kind of a knowledge base with almost everything we do these days. What about different languages? Do you suppose that in the garden, Adam and Eve, you know, this from a point of view of a creationist here and a young earth creationist specifically, was there just one language initially?
I believe there was. Mm-hmm. Yes, the language actually didn't come into play until God actually confused the language of man at the Tower of Babel. If you remember that, you know, recall that story. Well, not a story. It's actually a recording of fact. If you recall that incident in history, then you know, man was trying to reach up into the heavens, and what was so, you know, what was so bad about that? Why did God, you know, say that, hey, you know, if they continue along this process, man will be able to do just about anything. And it was at that point that, you know, God came down and confused their languages, which then created the languages of the world. You know, maybe not all the different dialects that we have today and all the different, you know, sub-languages that we have today, but certainly it was the root of, you know, language development, you know, in man. So that gives us an example that even language was God-given from the very beginning. I mean, if you look at Adam and Eve, they probably spoke, and I'm just, you know, conjecturing here, but they probably spoke the language of God, which might indeed be Hebrew.
Interesting notion.
So, you know, obviously some of those folks continued in the Hebrew language or the original language, whereas others took on an Asian language and a, you know, the Germanic type of languages or whatever, the other basic languages, Latin, you know, that we've had, you know, in the past. And language is branching off from that.
Interesting story, the Tower of Babel or Babel. I've always called it Babel. But it always disturbs me to think that maybe God was surprised by what we were doing. I think maybe that's the wrong conclusion to draw from that, though. But those heavenly discussions that occur in Genesis in particular have always fascinated me. You know, who's he talking to, and what language is he using, and why does he seem surprised? I mean, but I think maybe there was no surprise. This was simply a natural development of the course of events that he needed to tend to bend our will.
There was no surprise with God. I mean, he knew that man certainly had the capability of doing this, and they were trying to reach up to heaven to mimic what Satan or Lucifer was accused of and wanting, actually, when he got cast out of heaven, which was to be God himself. And so here's man mimicking what through obviously thoughts planted in man that, hey, you know, we're so great, we're going to become God. And I think that was part of the process. And so to slow that process down, because that's our goal, if we are not living in the heavenly realm as, you know, having God with us and within us by receiving Christ, it is our earthly goal is to become like God.
I see great lessons in the whole story, but that's always one I've had trouble taking 100% literally, because, you know, if that's the case, why aren't our skyscrapers knocked down now? Because we're still at it. We're still trying to be like God. Why doesn't he take corrective action now, or perhaps he is in some other way?
Well, wars and rumors of wars, I think, slow down the process, and, you know, Take, for example, Liberia, where we do some work with orphan relief and rescue with the orphan kids there. Before the war, Liberia was one of the jewels in West Africa and supplied not only the nations around it, but some areas of the world with not only food, but with rubber and other things. Mm-hmm. After their 14-year war, civil war, for example, they were reduced to rubble. And it's almost like they're starting from scratch again. And in some areas, they are. And so you had a society that went from, let's say 20,000 orphan kids to 250,000 orphan kids in 14 years. And a lot of parents were killed, and families were disrupted. Infrastructure was completely destroyed, and those things have a big effect on prosperity and the ability to continue in one's efforts to, if you will, build the towers.
Well, there's no shortage of tragedy these days, and I guess through history, it never has been. David, what are you thinking?
I was thinking that I was doing some searching while you guys were talking about the hyoid bone, but we kind of moved on from it. Well, I hate to go back to that. Now, one of the things about the hyoid bone is it comes up quite a bit in crime literature, and for you regular aficionados of all those cop shows that have autopsies a lot.
Oh, the body, yeah, seems to be the trend, doesn't it?
Yeah, the most strong evidence of strangulation is the fracture of the hyoid bone.
Okay, well, it's,
yeah.
I didn't even know I had one until today.
And you thought I never offered anything to the discussion.
Well, no, I never thought that.
Wikipedia's got an interesting, display of the hyoid bone. And and all kinds of it's kind of a horseshoe shaped bone that is not articulated in the sense that it's not anchored to anything else.
Oh,
now, anything else permanent?
Kind of floating, eh?
It's floating, and it's floating on muscles and ligatures and those kinds of things. Those non-permanent.
Mm-hmm.
It's not tied to other bones. And other animals do have hyoid bones, but they're articulated. They're attached to other bones.
Gotcha.
So they don't have the flexibility, and that's one of the reasons that our hyoid bone supports intense or complex speech, mm-hmm. whereas others just support nothing but grunts and groans. There are birds have hyoid bones, and they look a lot like wishbones.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they're very, very similar.
All right. Well,
now whether they're, I don't think they're the same. I don't think it's what we would call it, a wishbone or a hyoid bone. But geckos have hyoid bones, for example. I mean, okay. but they're articulated. They're attached to other bones.
We know the geckos can talk. We've seen them on TV many times.
Sure.
Yeah, very complex talk, speech too.
I used to buy my car insurance from the gecko. But my wife works for State Farm now, so I have to buy something.
Yeah, it's amazing the rabbit trails we run across here when we start talking about Neanderthals talking. We ranged far and wide, as always, but now, always interesting and informative, too. So
as long as I've derailed the conversation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the interesting things, and I just, if you look behind me and you see the wide variety of books and all kinds of stuff, it either looks like I just can't throw anything away, or I have a varied interest in a lot of different subjects.
Yes.
And the answer to both questions is yes. Mm-hmm. Now, I picked up a book, an older book by Edmund Wilson, the Harvard biologist who was written a number of, not biologists, but entomologists. And he wrote a book called, I think it's probably in the late 80s, called Consilience, C-O-N-S-I-L-I-E-N-C-E. And I didn't know what the word meant either. But he describes it in the beginning that it is a search for a unified theory that would encompass all other theories of sciences and humanities.
Hmm.
That somehow, scientists are continuing, And you know, there's the most recent attempt at a unified theory is string theory, or a quantum physics was the one that was you know, a couple of theories back, that somehow if we buy into
Stephen Hawking
kind of thing,
yeah, there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. it will explain not only why gravity works, but why we read from left to right on this side of the planet, and then other people read from right to left on the other side of the planet.
Hmm.
And then sometimes even why Skype works. I
or doesn't.
I don't know if that for sure.
Yeah.
But I'm only maybe 10, 15 pages into it, and I wanted to ask Dr. Don this morning, one, if he'd ever heard of the term or the effort towards a unified theory. And yeah, and Wilson is grew up as a Southern Baptist, and he even spent part of a chapter in his early book describing that as a teenager, he decided that all that religious stuff was just nonsense, and where the real action was intellectually was in science. But he's looking for a unified theory, almost to say, as long as it doesn't involve God.
Mm. Well, yes, the search for a grand unified field theory, for example, has been going on for a long, long time. Even Einstein himself was involved in that search, and obviously didn't come up with it. Otherwise, we would attribute it to him. But he was frustrated in his efforts not being able to discover what that magic formula, you know, was to unify all of the, and this was just the physical world, all the physical world together, not the social economic world, which is a different, you know, different game altogether. But yes, that's been going on for a long time. And as you said, one of the leading contenders is what's called the string theory, which actually you know correlates or corresponds to one of my thoughts. I wouldn't call it a theory, but it's just a thought, hypothesis, whatever, about how God created things in the beginning. And he tells us, you know, he says, you know, let there be light. So he spoke, and his you know, physical speech into this space-time continuum that we live in created vibrations, which you know, then created created something we call light. But then later in that verse, it says God separated the light from the darkness, and I believe he actually put a spin on this vibration going through space, for example. And that then created all of the elements, all of the subatomic particles and the atomic particles that we see today. So the string theory supports that. It supports that everything in everything physical is just made up of vibrations and vibrating strings, if you will, or vibrating rubber bands, if you will. Obviously very, very small, but for example, one theory has the electron being made up of three of these vibrating bands going around, you know, the nucleus of a atom, for example. And that fits very nicely for God actually speaking in the first place and creating all of this. So in one sense, one is saying, well, okay, can we find something that precludes God from all of this? And in another sense, we're, you know, if you look at it from a creationist point of view, these things point to not only the need for a creator, but reinforces, you know, our limited understanding as to how actually God went about, you know, creating the universe and creating everything that we see today.
I'm always falling back on the position of that science explains how, but it can never explain why. And why is a valid question.
I mean, yes, very much so.
It pertains to this. And if you insist on talking about how and not addressing why, it's incomplete. It will never be the whole story. So they always come to that point where there has to be a creator.
Well, and even such things as, you know, why is there beauty? Why is there color? Why is there, you know, why?
What do we need that stuff for? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, okay, beauty, you could say, well, that if something is beautiful, then we're attracted to beauty. And so that's how we propagate, because we see something beautiful and we, you know, we propagate that way. Or the bees are, you know, looking at the flowers and we're attracted to the flowers. And you know, some of that is certainly obviously physical, but there is something, I mean, there is no purpose in painting a picture, for example, of a beautiful sunset, other than to record its beauty and to appreciate it at a later time. And, you know, a lot of photography is involved with that, you know, it process as well. Mm-hmm. So how do you explain, you know, things like that? How do you explain love?
Music is a whole
music.
Field. Yeah,
I mean, music. That's... I mean, why are certain, you know, harmonics that create other, you know, higher harmonics, why is that more pleasing to the human ear than a dissonant sound? Mm-hmm. Well, it's because we live in a harmonic world. If God indeed spoke things into existence, wouldn't he speak it in a harmonic way?
And we're back into vibrations and string theory here again.
So. Yep, exactly. Yeah. So yeah. It's, yeah, it's kind of fun, you know, to think about these things and say, you know, this all speaks of we're not trying to get rid of God. I mean, some people are trying to get rid of God, but in the final analysis, it just glorifies him. Mm-hmm. And that really should be the point of science or any human activity, is to glorify God.
And thus we encourage the process. You scientists, keep looking, keep searching, and sooner or later you'll find him out there.
Yeah.
And we're all hoping for that.
I don't know how many times I watched, you know, I was watching football yesterday. I watched the Vikings and Detroit, and then also the game after that, Green Bay and Chicago.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many times, and I saw running backs and receivers and wide receivers who would catch the ball and run into the end zone, and then after doing a very short celebration dance, would point to the sky as if to say, thank you.
Uh-huh.
He did this.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know how many times.
Whoever, yeah.
I can remember four, maybe five or six, but it seems like it's becoming more common that there is, you know, even the lowly football player who's making six figures a year realizes that it wasn't just his legs and his arms and his muscles. And you know, in a friendly block from the left tackle that caused him to be into the end zone, but God had something to do with that as well.
Yeah, they look to the sky and say, you know, without your quarterback, I couldn't have done this.
Yes, thank you for the quarterback. Yes.
Talking with Dr. Don Clark of Creation Moments, want to recommend that you visit the website. It's a wonderful warehouse, storehouse, source of resources for you in your studies of creationism and young earth. And there's a lot of science there, too, that people don't get to see every day. A visit to creationmoments.com might be a good idea. You can link there from brokenroadradio.com. Don, as always, we're grateful that you stopped by this morning. And Happy New Year to you.
Yeah,
well, Happy New Year to you all too, and yeah, I hope you have a very good New Year's Day, and enjoy it and relax. And we'll see you next Monday.
Well, we'll look forward to that.
Talk
Take
to
care.
You
yeah, bye bye.
See you next year.